We're holding on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, seven lines, eight lines from the bottom. We started talking about yesterday. Now, the Mishnah says, the Beis Shammai says that if you're doing Kiddushin with Kesef, the minimum amount is a dinar. A dinar, or shove a dinar, or something that's equivalent in value to a dinar. So we've been discussing where does Beis Shammai, then Beis Hillel says a pruta or shove a pruta, which we'll discuss further on in the Gemara. So we've been discussing yesterday, why does Beis Shammai say a dinar? So we said so far two possibilities. One is because a woman is makbid on herself and won't be miskadish with less than a dinar. That was Reb Zeira's reason. And then we had Reb Yosef's reason is that we have a concept that Reb Yehuda said in the name of Reb Asi, that whenever the Torah says kesef, it means kesef tzori. It means silver coins from the tzori system of currency. And so we said within that, there are two ways of understanding that. It actually had brought from his Rebbeim that in that system, the smallest silver coin is a dinar. And Rashi doesn't like that, although Tosfos accepts that understanding of it. Rashi himself says that the vote is that we need that since we see that you require kesef tzori, then you need some kind of important amount of money, and therefore the Chachamim determine that a dinar is considered the minimum to be considered important for this purpose. So those are two reasons we would say why you need at least a dinar for kedushin according to Beis Shammai. So now the Gemara is going to give a third reason. Reb Shimon Lakish Omer, Taimayu de Beis Shammai Kid Chizkia. Rish Lakish says that the reason for Beis Shammai saying that you need at least a dinner is based on what Chizkia says. The Omer Chizkia says like this. Now, further on in the parak, we're going to start talking about the dinim of an Eved Ivri and an Omer Hevriya. Now, in particular, what you have is like this. A girl is sold as an Omer Hevriya. We're going to talk about in a few blocks. So her father, she's sold as a katana. Her father receives money for her. Now, there are various ways in which she can go free from being an Omer Hevriya. Among them, if 6 years pass, if she becomes a Naira, she develops Shtei Cyrus, etc. We'll talk about all that further on in the parak. But one possibility is called Megaras Pidyona V'yotza, that we can deduct from her redemption value the amount that she's worked so far. You have an example. Let's say that she was sold. Let's say her term of service is 6 years. Let's say she was sold for six mana. So it means that there's one mana per year. So if now 2 years pass and now she's raised enough money to buy her freedom, then she's only paying four mana because she already worked two of them off. So that's called Megaras and Pidyona V'yotza. Now, Rish Lakish says, quotes what Chizkiah says, that, and the same thing applies to an Eved Ivri. So Chizkiah quotes the Pasuk, Omakra, the Hefter, the Pasuk says he should make her be freed, which if it was Beniftis, which is completely passive, then it would mean that the master himself has nothing to do with it. But for Hefter, implies that the master himself is responsible to make it possible for her to be freed. And how does he do that? From this we learn that we deduct from the redemption value for her to go free, namely that the master calculates how long has she worked for him and then deducts that value and doesn't demand that to be paid when she's going to go free. Says Rish Lakish based on that, Iyamet b'shlema d'yohav la dinner. If you're going to tell me that to begin with he gives a dinner for the purpose of buying the Omer Hevriya, Hainu de Megarav Azla ad Pruta, then we understand it is possible to do Giroin. It is possible to deduct over time to get down. Eventually you get down to a Pruta. Eli Amit Yav La Pruta. But if you tell me that to begin with he gives her if to begin with you're telling me that it's possible to give a pruta, that you can purchase an Omer Hevriya with only a pruta, mi pruta mi megara, how can you deduct from a pruta? There's no smaller value than a pruta. So therefore, so we see that an Omer Hevriya has to be bought for for at least a pruta. And again, you know, now, okay, there are values between a pruta, there are values between a pruta and a dinner. But again, shlokish can be used in the svara, similar to what we said before, that once already we have, that it can't, we've shown logically based on Chizkiah's principle that it can't be a that it can't be a pruta. Then we go to the next to the next more significant value, which would be a dinner. So the idea would be, in other words, that now here actually we're talking about the kiddushin, really. Here we're talking about kiddushin rather than the purchase of the Alma Hevriya. But after all, what you have is further on in the parak, we're going to talk about the concept of yiyud, which is that there's a mitzvah that the master or his son should marry this Alma Hevriya, and instead of being a maidservant, she's going to become the woman of the house, the wife of the house. So therefore, in effect, what you have is, and the money that her father received for her when she was sold as an Alma Hevriya in the first place becomes the kess of kiddushin. So in fact, the Pnei Yeshua says that's really then related to the point that we learned yesterday, that because less than a dinner is not davar choshev. So here with an Alma Hevriya also, then it has to be a davar choshev. So that would be a reason to be saying that once we say it can't be a pruta, then we're gonna go all the way to a dinner rather than saying that it should be something in between. So the Gemara asks why. The Dilma Hachi Kama Achmana. Why? So, but the Gemara interjects. Resh Lakish has not finished giving his proof yet, but the Gemara interjects. Why is that a proof? The Dilma Hachi Kama Achmana. Maybe not. Granted, yes, the Torah says Behefta, and we have Chizkiah's rule that means Megaras and Pidyon de Vyotza, that it has to be that over time we deduct from the amount of the purchase price. When she wants to buy her freedom, but the Duma Hochikam Rachmana, maybe the Torah is saying, Hecha de Yoavla, dinner, if to begin with the master had paid a dinner for her, Tigara ad Pruta, then yes, we deduct over time until we get down to a Pruta, and the Gemara is soon going to give a table, not really a table, but whatever, the Gemara is soon going to give over here the details of how many Prutas there are in a dinner. It comes out to almost 200 of them. But anyway, maybe the Torah is implying that he could buy her with a pruta, but in that case, we wouldn't be megareya, because in that case, there's nothing to deduct from, because a pruta is the smallest coin. So maybe the Torah is not saying that always there needs to be the possibility of giroin. Maybe in fact there could be. You could buy without and then not have the possibility of giroin, and you would just say you buy her for a pruta, and eventually there comes a point she wants to purchase her freedom. Then she's going to have to pay that full pruta. And the Gemara answers, Loi Saka Daidach. You can't think that way. Dumya de yield, because after all, it has to be similar to yield, which is in the same pasuk. Asher lo yo'oda v'hefta. The pasuk says, if he doesn't do yield, then he has to allow her to go free. Namely, my yield afagavdi ibori miyad viibori le miyad. Now, when it comes to yield, even though it is true, it is up to him or his son to decide whether he wants to do yield, as we're going to learn further on in the perek. But kol hechad le motzi miyad lehavu zvina zvini. But in a case where yield would be impossible to begin with, then the sale is not a valid sale. And Rashi gives an example from later on in the perek. Let's say that so the father, for example, is not allowed to sell the daughter. Is not allowed to sell his daughter to somebody, to a relative, where she'd be an erva to them. So say for example, she can't be sold to to her brother, because her brother wouldn't be able to do yield with her, because obviously they can't get married. We're going to learn later on on Daf Yud Ches, it's machlokas about that, but the halacha is that you can't, in a case where excuse me, in a case where yield is going to be impossible because there's no way for her to be able to marry either the Oda and either the master himself or his son, then the halacha is that then you can't sell her in the first place. So you see, in other words, that you have to have, fine, you don't necessarily, not yield is not necessarily going to take place, but you need the possibility of yield to exist. And if that possibility doesn't exist, then you can't sell her to him in the first place. So an example of it, for example, would be the father can't sell to his son because she can't marry the Odin himself because he's her brother. She can't marry the Odin's son because she's his aunt, and an aunt is also an Erva. So we see that even though yield doesn't necessarily have to happen, but there has to be the possibility. So Hohanami, the same thing. We can say as far as the Vehefta, Kol Heichad Dolei Motzi Megara, we can argue that yes, wherever it's impossible to deduct from the money, because to begin with, she was sold for a pruta, Loi Havu Zvina Zvini, then the sale is not a valid sale. So there you go. Then that proves that you can't have a pruta for the sale of an Amar Evriya. And again, we're going to say as a similar logic before that once we're saying it can't be a pruta, then we're going to go to a dinner, which is the net, according to Bishama, we're going to go to a dinner, which is going to be the next significant amount of money. So the Shlokish continues, V'kidusha isha, l'Bishama nafkaluhuma Amar Evriya. Now, in turn, Bishama is learning the concept of kidushin of a regular wife from the yield of an Amar Evriya. So therefore they're saying ma omar hevriya b'pruta lemichnia, just like an omar hevriya we've just established cannot be acquired with only a pruta, af isha b'pruta lemikadosha, the same way a wife, a regular wife, cannot be mekodesh with a pruta. So the Gemara says, still fine, you can't have a pruta, but why do you need to be as much as an entire dinner? The aim of palga de dinner, maybe a half a dinner would be enough. You can still do giroin then, you can still deduct from that over time. The aim of shtei prutas, or maybe not, or maybe even two whole pruta, or maybe two prutas would be enough. And the one answer is kiven da piktim a pruta, oik me a dinner, because once it can't be a pruta anymore, according to this reason, according to Bishamai, it's because of this reason, according to the Shlokish's understanding of Bishamai, it's because of this reason, then therefore Bishamai is going to say, the Chachamim said it at a dinner, because again, you have this kind of idea that you want it to be a davar chashuv. You want it to be something important. You want it to be something important, and therefore dinner is considered to be an important thing. Okay, so that's Rish Lakish's understanding of Bishamai. Rava Amar, Rava says a fourth reason for Bishamai. Hainu time of Bishamai shaloi yubnoisi sura kehefker. Rava says the reason why Bishamai says a dinner, nothing to do with Amar Evriya, is just because it shouldn't be a pruta. It shouldn't just be that you acquire an isha of a Jewish woman with a dover muat, with a tiny amount. So in other words, Rashi says that Bishamai would say, even though daraisa might be a valid kiddushin, but the Chachamim didn't want that Jewish women should be like hefker, and therefore they're mevatel this kiddushin, and therefore, so Bishamai is going to say, in other words, if a man is mekadesh with a pruta or up to a dinner, then yes, midaraisa would work, even according to Bishamai, but midrabanan, we're going to take away that kiddushin and say that it's invalid because we don't want Bnei Yisrael to be like hefker. It would be a similar concept to we've learned a number of times in Masechta Gittin and other places, called a Mekadesh, a Daita that Abaron Mekadesh, when a man is Mekadesh, a woman, then to begin with, he has in mind that it should be according to the Das of the Chachamim, and there are those rare cases where after Inur Abaron the Kiddushin, where the Chachamim undo the Kiddushin and make them retroactively invalid, so Beis Shammai says here it's going to be the same kind of thing. Okay, that takes care of Beis Shammai. Next, we said, So now we said in the Mishnah, Bishilo says that a pruta is enough for kiddushin. So how much is a pruta? Sober Rabbi Yosef Lamema, pruta called who? Rabbi Yosef thought to say that a pruta could be any amount. Whatever in a particular time is considered a pruta, then that would be good enough. Now the Mishnah goes on to say, and this is Abaye is going to point out to Rabbi Yosef, that the Mishnah defines a pruta in terms of an iser ha'italki, which is a certain size of silver coin, as we're going to talk about now. But Rabbi Yosef thought that the Mishnah is just giving us an example, but it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever a pruta is in any given place. So for example, in other words, Rabbi Yosef might say that in the United States, it would be enough to use one penny. Or in some other country, it would be enough to use whatever the smallest denomination of coin is that they use in that place. Omale Abaya, but Abaya says, how could you say that? How could you say that? V'halokatani, the Mishnah continues, kamahi pruta, how much is a pruta? Echad mishmona b'iser heitalki. It's 1/8 of an Italian iser, and therefore that means the Mishnah is saying that it has to have a certain minimum size. Now you're going to argue maybe, Rabbi Yosef, that maybe the Mishnah is just talking about in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, that you had that ratio between them, that a pruta was 1/8 of an iser. But in later times, even if the pruta loses, even if the pruta is considered is smaller in value, even if they make smaller prutas with less metal in them and they're worth less, you would say in later times, maybe you just go to, according to whatever people consider a pruta, the smallest coin in any given monetary system. But no, says Abaye, you can't say. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Rav Simai estimated in his times that a pruta is 1/8 of an Italian iser. That, in other words, Rashi says, the case was that a woman had been niskadish with a pruta, and Reb Simai had to check whether that pruta is in fact worth 1/8 of an Italian iser. In other words, so not like Reb Yosef is saying that whatever a pruta is, and we don't care. He had to figure it out in terms of the iser heitalki and made sure that it was at least 1/8. V'chiyasa Rovin Omer, when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said similarly, Reb Distoy v'Reb Yanai v'Reb Oshia Shiru, kama ava pruta, echa mishisha v'iser heitalki. They evaluated and said that a pruta is 1/6 of an Italian iser. Now, why the difference between 1/8 and 1/6, we'll get to soon in the Gemara. But the point is, in other words, that all of these chachamim were saying required that the pruta be a minimum value that in terms of the smallest silver coin. And iser heitalki, they didn't just say that a pruta is a pruta and it doesn't matter what it's worth in terms of other coins. So the Ritva, by the way, points out, you're going to ask if you're saying that the Mishnah is only talking about B'dodah Shel Moshe, so why would that be relevant? Moshe Rabbeinu's Dur was a long time ago, and you could say, says the Ritva, maybe, for example, what if there's a place where there's no prutis at all? Then we have to fall back on the pruta of Moshe Rabbeinu's times. Or what if the woman says, I specifically want to be niskadish only with the pruta of the size of Moshe Rabbeinu's times? But anyway, Abaye is saying it's not so. The fact is, the Mishnah is implying that in all times, in all places, you always have to have, it's not just good enough that the coin is called a pruta, it actually has to be a certain minimum value in terms of an iser heitalki. So Omele Rabbi Yosef, Ihochi, so Rabbi Yosef says back to Abaya, well, in that case, if you're telling me that a pruta is always 1/8 of an iser heitalki, heiner de tenena, then how does that fit with what we learn in a brisa regarding an osham toluri? Now we have like this, we know that a person does certain averas, then he brings a chatas. Now, a chatas is a female sheep or a female goat within 1 year old, and such a thing you can buy, or at least in those times, you could buy fairly cheaply. On the other hand, then you have, rather, we're not talking about a chatas versus an osham toluri, rather, we're talking about the case of me'ila. We know, we say every day in davening, zivche shamet zibav ha-shomos, Elohein ha-shomos, Hashem gzeilos, Hashem me'ilos. So you have a number of cases where you have to bring an osham, and among them is a case of me'ila, where a person uses something of hekdesh. So even if he only used a pruta's worth of hekdesh, then he ends up needing to bring an osham. And the Torah tells us over there that the osham has to be that osham has to be a ram worth at least 2 sloim. So so Braisa says, let's consider then, we can see from that, the serious consequences of an avera. Seva chashov kama prutas b'shnei sloim yosem me'alpayim. Go figure out how many prutas there are in 2 sloim. There's over 2,000 of them. In other words, the Braisa is saying, so look at this. This guy was had hanah from hekdesh only b'shoyim, and only maybe to the value of a pruta. And yet we're making him bring a korban that's worth over 2,000 prutas. So you see how careful of a person has to stay away from even the tiniest bit of avera. You have a similar kind of thing that Gemara mentions elsewhere, as far as the difference between a chatas and an osham toloi, where a person does something that makes him chayev chatas, he has to bring an animal for a chatas, which can be fairly cheap. But then if he's not sure whether we did it, then he brings an osham toloi, which is worth far more. But here we're not talking about that. Here we're talking about asham me'ilis. Anyway, says Rav Yosef, hashta alpayim lehavion. Now, if we figure out, according to the standard of a pruta always having to be at least 1/8 of an iser hetalki, then as the Gemara is going to make the calculation soon, you don't even get 2,000. You don't even get 2,000 prutas, as the Gemara is going to calculate soon. According to that standard, you get only about 1,500 prutas to two sloim. How can the Braisa call it more than 2,000? So doesn't that show, therefore, that the value of the pruta fluctuates over time? And you have times when a pruta is worth a lot less than it was in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and therefore, so the Braisa, the Tana of the Braisa, was talking at such a time when a pruta was worth far less. So doesn't that show, says Rabbi Yosef, that a pruta will fluctuate over time, and it doesn't necessarily always have to be 1/8 of an Isser HaTalki? So the Gemara says, not necessarily, because a certain old Talmud Chacham says, and Tosfos elsewhere brings that Ahu Sava in such Gemaras might mean Eliyahu Hanavi. So this Ahu Sava says, no, Anotaninallah, I actually taught that Braisa, and you have the wording wrong. I didn't say it's more than 2,000. I said korev l'apayim. It's almost 2,000 prutas. So that deflected Rabbi Yosef's objection. Still, Rabbi Yosef says soif alpha b'chomesh meo tlosin v'shita hu d'havion. So still, it comes out if you calculate that you only have 1,536 prutas in 2 sloim. The Gemara is going to give the figures soon. A stella consists of 4 dinarim. A dinner, as we're going to say soon, consists of 24 iser. So that means, in other words, so there are 4 times 24, there are 96 iser in a stella. So therefore, there are 192 iser in 2 sloim. If an iser is 1/8, is 8 times a pruta, then 192 times 8 comes out to 1,536. So you're still nowhere near 2,000. How can your braisa call it korev alpayim? And the answer is, okay, kivin the nafkal homi pauga, korev alpayim korilei. The fact is, it's more than halfway the distance between 1,000 and 2,000, because we're saying it's 1,536. So therefore, the braisa can round it off and say that it's almost 2,000, even though it's really several hundred less than that. But in reality, it would in fact be 1,536. And you can't prove anything from this braisa that the value of a pruta fluctuates over time. Okay. So the Gemara says, so that's it. So we've established, therefore, that a pruta is an actual standard of value, and it has to be worth at least 1/8 of an Italian iser. However, though, we said before that some chachamim evaluated at 1/6 of an iser. So let's figure that out. By the way, how this works out in later times, how this works out in modern times, you have a bit of a machlokes haposkim about how this translates into modern terms. Do we put it in terms of the actual amount of silver, in which case they calculate, the Rambam gives us the figure based on the following Gemara, that it comes out that a pruta would be the equivalent of half of a grain of barley's weight of silver, the value of that. So Poskim, I think the Chazon Ish, for example, calculates that comes out to about 1/40 of a gram of silver, which would be something like a thousandth of an ounce, which would be the equivalent of about 1/1,000 of an ounce of silver. Now, currently, for example, the price of silver is about $24 and change per ounce. So therefore, according to that, then a pruta would come out to about 2 or 3 cents. Some poskim say that actually maybe we should consider that a pruta for this purpose and for other purposes in halacha is the minimum amount with which you could buy something in a particular society. So you have, you know, nowadays you can't find anything that you can buy for 2 or 3 cents. The minimum you can really find that you that will purchase anything, even like a even like a small candy or something, would be like 10 cents. So therefore, there are some poskim who argue that maybe for that purpose, then a pruta would be considered 10 cents. Whatever the case, it's a fairly small amount. Somebody was telling me the other day, he asked, there's a yeshiva bacher was telling me, he asked his Rebbe, in places where they charge for grocery bags, where, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, they charge 10 agorot for that, which would also be approximately a pruta, could you be mekadesh with a grocery bag? And he says, as Rosh Yeshiva told him, actually, even when they don't charge for the grocery bag, you could, because the fact is, they don't charge for it, because they figure, you know, it's a freebie, we'll give it to you, but really, it does have that minimum value, so yes, conceivably, you could be mekadesh with that. Okay. Anyway, Gufa, the Gemara says, getting back to, let's analyze this business about a pruta and 1/8 or 1/6 of an iser. Ki osir of Dimi Omer, when Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Shir Reb Simai Bedorah Kami Pruta Achon Meshmona B'Iser Italki. He said, Reb Simai in his time evaluated and found that a pruta is 1/8 of an Italian iser. But when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, "Shir of this story, Rab Yane, Rab Oshia, Kamei Pruta, Echad Mishisha beIsur Heitalki." They evaluated that it's 1/6 of an Isur Heitalki. So what is it? 1/8 or 1/6? Omale Abaya Rab Dimi. So Abaya asked Rab Dimi, "Nema at the Rovin, the plug to the Hani Tanoi Kama Fugitu." Does it come out that you and Rab Dimi are actually arguing in accordance with the following Machlokas Tanoim? The Tanya, namely, we learn in a Braisa. Pruta Sha'amr Chacham Echon Mishmoina B'Isser Heitalki, the Pruta the Chacham are talking about in our Mishnah and for various other purposes in Halacha is 1/8 of an Italian Isser. And the figure goes like this: Shesh Ma'a Kesef Dinner. 6 silver ma'a make up a dinner. And then in turn, the Braisa is not going to mention further over here, but there are 4 dinarim to the seller. Next, ma'a shnei punyonin. A ma'a in turn consists of 2 smaller coins called punyonin. Punyon shnei isorin. A punyon consists of 2 iser. Iser shnei musmisim. An iser is made up of 2 musmisim. Musmas shnei kunterunkin. Kunter shnei prutas. Nimtza pruta achan mishmoneh b'iser italki. So it comes out that a pruta, says the Tanakama of this braisa, is 1/8 of an Italian iser. Because you have, in other words, so there are 2 prutas there to the kunterk. 2 kuntrukin to the musmas, so 4 prutas to the musmas, and 2 musmusim to the and 2 musmusim to the iser. So 2 times 2 times 2 comes out to be 8. So therefore, so you have a pruta as 1/8 of an iser. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Reb Shimon Gamliel disagrees. He calculates as follows: Shloisha hadrasin lamar. A mar consists of 3 smaller coins called hadrosin, shnei hanotzin lahadris, a hadris consists of 2 hanotzin, shnei shminin lahonetz, a honetz consists of 2 shminin, shnei prutas lashomin, and a shomin consists of 2 prutas. So therefore, nipsa pruta achas mishisha be'isar heitalki. So it comes out, according to his figures, that a pruta is 1/6 of an iser. Now, in his system, he didn't mention iserim. He only mentioned some other coins, ma, hadris, honetz, but a ma is a known thing. We know that a ma is 1/6 of a dinar. So it comes out, according to his figures, that you have, in a ma, you have 144 prutas. So since an iser is known to be 1/24 of a ma, then therefore it comes out 6 prutas to the iser. Or rather, not to the ma, rather, but to the dinner. You come out with 24, you come out with 24, yeah, you come out with 24 prutas to the, you come out that there are 24 iser in a dinner, and in turn, therefore, that the pruta comes out to be 1/6 of that, so that you have 144 prutas in each ma, and 144 times 6, which is going to be 864, you're going to have that number to the you're going to have that number of prutas in the cellar. which of a cella consists of four genera. Anyway, so it comes out, therefore, that so it comes out, therefore, that there are six protists to the Isser. So says Abayatir of Dimi, you're telling us that it was eight protists to the dinner, and that Rab Simai figured that eight protists to the Isser, and Rab Simai figured that out. On the other hand, Rovin is telling us that some other Chachamim, Rab Distoy, Rab Yani, and Rab Oshia, figured 1/6. So does it come out that your report is according to the Chachamim, and his report is according to Rab Shimon Gamliel? Lamed Mar Omakatana Kam of Robin to Omakat of Shimon Gamliel. So does it come out that you and Robin are arguing in that same respective opinion of the Chachamim and Rab Shimon Gamliel? Amalei, Dimi says no. Bain Lidi Deal, Bain O Bain Robin, both Bain Deal, Bain Robin, are libid at Tanakama. No, we're both going within the view of the Tanakama where the halacha is like it. Well, like Kasha, there's no contradiction. Hod the Yaku Isuri, but Hod the Zoil Isuri. Because it depends. Sometimes Isurim go up in value. Sometimes Isurim go up in value, and therefore you have. And therefore they're worth the correct amount. So sometimes you have 24 of them to the dinner. On the other hand, sometimes you have an Isser is worth less relative to the coins above it. Hod Yaku Isuri, when Isurim are more expensive, kum Arab Esther Arab Azuza, then you get 24 of them to a zuz being another name for a ma. Or for a dinner, rather. So therefore, so sometimes you have, when the values are the way they should, in Rab Simai's times, everything was, all the silver coins were valued as we would expect them to be, and then an Isser comes out to 1/24 of a dinner. Hodizul, whereas when they go down in value, Kumtlosin or Train Bezoza, then you end up with 32 of them to the, then you end up with 32 of them to the Zuz, 32 of them to the dinner, And therefore the value of the pruta will vary, and so the pruta will always be a pruta. But the pruta in terms of Isurim is going to vary. Sometimes it's going to be 1/8, and sometimes it's going to be 1/6, depending how much the Isur is worth at the time. Okay, so let's talk more about this matter of kiddushin with a pruta or less than a pruta. The halach, after all, is like this hilol that you need a pruta. Omer Shmuel, kidusha b'tmara. Shmuel says that if a man is mekadesh a woman with one date, afilo oimid kur tmarim b'dinner, even if a kur of dates is currently selling for a dinner, where therefore, since we just established that a dinner contains only a few hundred, a dinner contains at most less than 200 prutas, so 192 prutas it contains, and now a kur is 30 saw, so obviously if you have a quart of dates going for a dinner, then it means each individual date is worth far less than that. Nevertheless, mikudeshes, she's still considered to be mikudesh. Says Shmuel chayshinan shemashava pruta b'modai, because we have to be concerned that maybe that date is worth a pruta in modai. Modai is far away, but it's a place where Rashi says where it's not going to be so easy to find dates. They don't grow over there, and therefore even a single date is going to be worth a lot of money. So in other words, so we have to be concerned that maybe in Modai it is in fact worth a pruta. There's a machlokas we've shown him what exactly Shmuel means. Now you have an opinion of. The Rishonim will bring from Tosfos, it's not in the Tosfos in front of us, it's in a different version of Tosfos, that it doesn't matter whether this food, let's say, for example, what if the date is going to spoil by the time you bring it to Modai? Nevertheless, the Kiddushin, according to Shmuel, would still be Chal, because what happens, you might have right there might happen to be a person from Modai standing over there, and if he sees that the Kiddushin are not valid, and he thinks to himself, wait, where I come from, dates are a very expensive, rare treat, and they're worth a lot more than a pruta. So he's going to think that even a pruta is not enough to be mekadesh, and therefore you're going to have problems. So because of that zera, therefore Shmuel would say that the kedushin are valid, at least on a drabbanan level. On the other hand, the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim learn that it has to be that the food would be able to make it intact to Modai without spoiling. The Rambam says that no, if it's not a matter of a zera that a person might be there from Modai or whatever, just the fact is it might actually be worth a pruta in Modai. And therefore, so he learns that it's only a kiddushi suffix. It's a suffix. Is it in fact worth that amount in Madai? So therefore you have kiddushi, therefore you have kiddushi suffix. But if it's something that would spoil before you reach there, then the Rambam says it's not going to be a, it's for sure not going to be a kiddushi there at all. So the Gemara says, "V'hanan tnan v'shilul amid pruta or v'shava pruta." Didn't the Mishnah say that v'shilul says you need at least a pruta or a shava pruta? And the answer is exactly that. Like Kasha, halbe kedushay vaday, halbe kedushay suffit. The Mishnah is saying that you need a pruta for kedushay vaday. What Shmuel is saying is, if the thing is worth less than a pruta, then you have kedushay suffit, and you have, in other words, if somebody else is makadish her, then you have a suffit whose kedushin are going to be valid. So again, one way of learning it is the suffix already on a daraisa level, and another way of understanding is the suffix on a drabon. So the Gemara gives some cases. And the Gemara says similarly, how gavra the aktish bezavda de udi. There was one time a man was makadish a woman using a bundle of muchin. Muchin is like a soft material, like you use a stuffing for pillows and cushions and things like that. So he took a bundle of that and was makadish a woman with it. Yosef of Shimi Bachia kamei de rab, but kama ayin bo isba shavu pruta eini loy loy. So Rav Shimi Bachia was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab, and he was checking this bundle to see is it in fact worth a shavu pruta or not. To say that if it's a shava pruta, then the kedushin will be valid, and if not, then not. So the Gemara says, so what? Be less of a shava pruta loy. So what are you telling me? If it's not a shava pruta, she for sure wouldn't be mekodesh. V'amar Shmuel chashin, and didn't we just say that Shmuel says we do have to be choshish for that? And again, the answer is like kasha. Hal b'kedushay vaday, hal b'kedushay suffik. There would still be kedushay suffik, even if it seems to us to be worth less than a pruta, because again, it might be worth a pruta someplace else. So therefore, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi is is checking to see is it in fact for sure a pruta, and then the answer would be that it's kedushay vaday. Even if it turns out that it's less than a shava pruta, though, we would still say it's kedushay suffik because maybe it's worth a pruta someplace else. Similarly, the Gemara says, "Ahu gabra the aktish ba'avna de kul." With all of this said, by the way, there was something in the Gemara a few days ago that mentioned we had something where Rabbi Yosef said over there that. When you're using something that's the equivalent of a pruta, it has to be the kitz. It has a known value. So Tosfos discusses over there, how does that fit with all Gemara over here, where we're seeing that people are going and evaluating things to see whether they're worth a pruta or not. So Tosfos over there says, okay, evidently the halacha is not like Rabbi Yosef. On the other hand, there are explanations that maybe Rabbi Yosef is only talking about certain kinds of things, only certain kinds of shava kesef. Do we require them to be kits? Do we require them to have a known and fixed value? But maybe for example, let's say the Gemara had talked about over there. Let's say he's makadosh with silk clothing. So then you need to have that the value of them is known. But maybe when it comes to other things like here, a bundle of stuffing or whatever, maybe that's not necessary. Tosfos did point out over there because of all of these considerations about whether in fact it's worth a pruta or not, or not so much whether it's worth a pruta rather, but whether it has a known value or not. And we have to be concerned that if it doesn't have a known value, maybe she expected it to be worth more, and it turns out it's not. Because of that, the minig eventually developed to be mekadesh with a plain gold ring, where the value of it is clearly known, and there's no wiggle room. For example, if you had, let's say, a ring with a stone in it, then you could talk about different experts are going to evaluate the value of the stone differently, and then you could say there might be suffix kedushin, because conceivably she could say, I wouldn't have agreed to the kedushin if I knew that the stone is worth less than I thought that it was. With the gold ring, you don't really have such a thing. Anyway, the Gemara continues. How gavra de aktish ba'avna de kohla. There was a man, it was Makadish, with a blue stone, specifically kuchala, Rashi says, is a piece of marble, a piece of dark colored marble. So he was makadish, a woman with that. Yosef Rav Chista v'kamashayr lei yispe shavu pruta ein v'loy loy. So again, Rav Chista was sitting and saying, and then trying to figure out whether this thing is in fact worth a pruta or not. So again, the Gemara asks about Amar Shmuel Chashinan. So Shmuel says that we're choshesh that it might be worth a shavah prota someplace else. And the answer is Rav Chista lo sava lo de Shmuel. Rav Chista does not agree with what Shmuel says. So he would say that there's no such thing as Kedushi Safik in this case. If it is a pruta, then she's Mekodesh. If it's not worth a pruta, we're not concerned that maybe it's worth a pruta someplace else. We would just say she's not Mekodesh, and that's that. Now, Tosfos asks, why doesn't the Gemara give the same answer for Rav Chista as it did for Rav Shimi Bar Chiya and say that it would be a matter of Kedushi Vada and Kedushi Safik? So Tosfos explains that the case is that in the previous case involving Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, the case was that, rather in the case over here of Rav Chista, is talking about that afterwards his brother came to be Mekadesher. So now Rav Chista wants to say that, so now as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Rav Chista is going to tell the first brother, you don't have the ability with Kedushin like that to answer her to your brother. If it was Kedushay Safik, then look, she'd need a get from him anyhow. Then anyway, she's going to be also to his brother. Since, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Rav Chista tells him, you don't have the ability with that kind of Kedushin to answer her to your brother, then therefore necessarily we have to say that it means Rav Chista is saying she doesn't need a get at all, even Miss Safik, and therefore it has to be that Rav Chista disagrees with Shmuel. So the Gemara continues, Omra le ime. So the mother of these brothers says to Rav Chista, how could you say, what do you mean it's not worth a pruta, and therefore the kedushin of my oldest son might not be a kedushin? On the day he was mekadesher, it was worth a shavah pruta. Nowadays, maybe the price of marble has gone down, so it's not worth a shavah pruta, but back then it was. But Rav Chista says, "Lav kol kaminach to asra la basra." You don't have the ability with your testimony to say that she should be also to the second one, because in other words, basically, you're only one aid. He says, "Lav hainu di Yehudis dveis or de Rav Chia." Wouldn't this be similar to the case of Yehudis, the wife of Rav Chia? She was having pain in giving childbirth. Rashi explains every time she had babies, she had twins. We learned in Yevamos that she and Rav Chia had first twin boys whose names were Yehuda and Chizkiah. Chizkiah later on became the famous Amor Chizkiah, who's quoted throughout Shas. We learned something from him earlier. Then she had twin girls named Pazi and Tavi. So it was very difficult for her, the births, because every time she was having twins. So now, so one time, Omrelay, so one time she tells Rav Chia, Omrelay Aim, my mother told me, Kibaboch Avuch Kedushi Kizutras, your father accepted Kedushin on your behalf when you were little, and therefore she's arguing, therefore, so I'm also to you. So we shouldn't stay married. Omrelay, and Rav Chia tells her, sorry, that's not going to work. Lav Kok Mina, De Imach, De Asrat, Lich Ilavoy, your mother does not have the ability as one aid like that to ask you to me. With that edus, it doesn't work. So the same way, Rav Chista says to this woman over here that the mother, it wasn't the mother of the brothers, actually, it was the mother of the woman herself, whatever. Anyway, he says, you don't have the ability to answer her, your testimony that at one time this piece of marble was worth a pruta is not enough to answer her. You want to say that, you would need two edim. Or we have to find that, in fact, it's worth a pruta at the time that I'm evaluating it. But without that, we can discount what you're saying. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Yevamos, and then I think in some other places as well, that Rav Chista's wife was very not very good to him. And this would be the kind of thing, for example, that we're talking about, which is using excuses to claim that she's also to him altogether, and therefore that Rav Chia has actually been committing an Avera by having relations with her all this time. So this would be the kind of thing that we're talking about, that she was acting in this way. Anyway, Amri le Rabbanan le Rav Chista. However, the other Chachamim said to Rav Chista, still, why are you saying that? Because you don't find this piece of marble to be worth a pruta, and you disagree with Shmuel, therefore you say there's no kedushin at all. Amai, why should that be? There are edim in a place called Idis. We know, in other words, there's a coil, there's a known rumor going around And that at the time there were people who saw with the Kiddushin and saw that it was worth a pruta, and now they've gone to a place called Idis, and they know that it was worth a pruta. So fine. You're saying you're not going to pay attention to the mother of the kala and say that that we should accept on the basis of what she's saying that it's worth a pruta. But here you have a koil that there were edim that there were edim there at the time. So wouldn't that be enough? So Rav Chista answers, hashtamiyu loy lesnu kamon. Yes, but the fact is, right now those edim are not there. If they come, then they will deal with it. Right now, they're not. Right now they're not present. So we don't have to worry about it. Tosfos brings a girsa that the word is not edis, but rather uris, which would be a rare word in the Gemara for the rest. So these are people who they were here in Babel at the time, and now they've traveled, west. Tosfos also answers that. Tosfos also explains that again, there's only a coil. We don't know for sure that there are edim, but there is a coil that there are edim. It's not just that there's a chash, there might have been edim, because again, obviously, then ein l'dovah soif. So what we mean is, in this case, there's a coil. So he's saying a coil is not enough to make it that it should be definitely valid kedushin. Right now, when I'm evaluating that this thing is not worth a shavah prota, so we have every reason to believe that in fact, at the time of the kedushin, it wasn't worth a prota either. The fact that there's a koil, that there are edim who saw that it was worth a prota, right now they're not here, we're not worried about them. Lav hainu de Rav Chanina. Wouldn't that be similar to the case that Rav Chanina says? The Amr Rav Chanina, we have a case in Ksubis where the Gemara discusses over there the matter of a shvuya. You have a woman was taken captive by Goyim, where we have to be concerned that the Goyim may have raped her and she's also to a Koyin. But the Gemara tells us that you have a story over there involving the daughters of Shmuel who were taken captive and were brought to the Beis Medrash of Rav Chanina. So these girls were smart. They knew the halacha. So they didn't want that they should be considered shvuyas because then they'd be also to marry a kohen. What they did is they asked the captors, the goyim, to wait outside. And then they walked into the Beis Medrash themselves and told Rav Chanina, nishbesi u tahorani. The Mishnah describes over there, you can have a case where a woman comes to Beis Din and says, I was taken prisoner by goyim. However, I'm tahor. They didn't defile me. They didn't rape me. And then the halacha is we believe them because Hapesha hit her, we wouldn't have even known that they were captives without them telling us in the first place, and they themselves in the same breath are also telling us that they're tahor. So Rav Chanina applied that halacha in this case. These daughters of Shmuel knew that halacha, so they did just that. They made sure that the captors, that the goyim, are not present when they told Rav Chanina Shbesi Utahorani. And so now in that Gemara over there, so actually Rav Chanina says to Rav Shimon Ba'aba, you're a Kohen, go ahead and marry one of them. In fact, you're related to them also. Rav Shimon Ba'aba is a cousin or something of theirs. So the Gemara asks over there, so Rav Shimon Ba'aba says, what do you mean? There's a coil that they were taken captive, that there were Edim that they were taken captive. And if there were Edim, then this whole thing of Apesha Hitcher doesn't work. And Rav Chanina says, so what? Edeha b'tzad estan v'te'osir. So what? The Edim are only, or someplace up there in the north. Is that a reason to make her osir? Meaning, if those Edim come up, if those Edim come and testify in front of us, then we have what to worry about. But as long as those Edim are not here, the fact that there's a coil that such Edim exist, we don't have to worry about it. We can apply the rule of Apesha osir, Apesha hitir, and say that these women are mutter to marry a Kohen. So therefore, Rav Chista says in the same vein over here, you're telling us that there's a coil, that there are edim someplace else, that in Idis, or as Tosfos says, in Uris in the West, who say that this thing was worth a shavah prota at the time. Fine, if those edim come, then we'll deal with it. Right now, these edim are not here, and we don't have to worry because on the basis of a coil that we should say that maybe those edim are going to show up and they're going to say that it was worth a pruta. If they show up, then we'll worry about it. So the Gemara says, Abaya and Rava lo sviru lohu lohadu Rav Chista. On the other hand, Abaya and Rava do not agree with Rav Chista on that. They say, yes, Rav Chista, you're trying to bring a proof from that case of Rav Chanina. That's different. Imhe kelu b'shvuya. granted, the Chachamim might be maker when it comes to a Shvuya, which she deliberately tries to make herself ugly and unattractive to the captor because she doesn't want to be attractive to him, so then he'll rape her. There can also be, for example, that she figures if she doesn't look as attractive, then when the captor offers her for sale, then people are likely to not, then they're likely to charge less for her, and that'll help. If Pidyon Shvuyim is going to take place, the goy is going to figure he's not going to get much money for her anyway, and he'll be willing to sell her cheaply. So by a Shvuya, you have strong reason to begin with anyway to say that maybe the goy didn't rape her. Nekel be'eshes ish. How can we make the same kula when it comes to an eshes ish where you don't have that consideration? Tosfos brings another possibility that a few other possibilities what Abaya and Rava are saying. Another explanation is that a shvuya, even if we have Edim that she was taken captive, the fact is they don't know whether she became Tomei. So on the other hand, by an eshes ish, if we have Edim, so in other words, like this, when it comes to a Shvuya, even if we have Edim that she's a Shvuya, that's not necessarily enough to say that she's actually also to a Koyin. Technically, they're not seeing that she was Tomei, that she became Tomei, that she was raped, only that she was taken captive. Whereas over here, if the Edim tell us that this piece of marble is worth a Prutta, that's it, she's Makodesh. Another point Tosfos says is that... another point is that by a shvuya, the fact is it's only an isur lav, because even if she was raped by the goy, maximum she's also to a koyin by an isur lav being a zoyna. On the other hand, here we have a misa spaced in, Tosfos doesn't like that. Tosfos finds a way in which you can actually have, as a result of this, there could be something involving misa. Tosfos says, imagine this woman who's a zoyna marries a koyin. Then they have a child. That child will be a cholol. If that child does avoda on Shabbos in the Beis Hamikdash, he'll be chayev misa because he's not able to do the avoda. So therefore, so Tosfos on that basis rejects that third explanation. But anyway, the point is that Abaya and Rav are saying just because in the case of Rav Chanina, you say we're ignoring the possibility of Edim because they're not here in front of us. But that doesn't necessarily apply to an Eishes Ish. And there's a number of other explanations from Rishonim about what the difference is. In any case, Abaya and Rava are saying, just because in the case of a Shvuya you have that concept, doesn't show that it would also apply in the case of an Eishes Ish. So the Gemara says, Ishtar, the fact, so what happened? So now you have this woman. In other words, there's a suffix. Was she Mekodesh to the first one or to the second one? Well, Rav Chista had said that since he didn't find that the piece of marble was worth a prutta, therefore he said the second one's kedushin are valid because the first ones were not tortious. So the Gemara says, Yishtayr ma'ahi mishpacha b'surah. Eventually, some members of that family remained in surah. O poshura bonin mina, the chachamim of surah, stayed away from that family and would not intermarry with them. Now the reason was not because they held like Shmuel and they held there might be kedusha suffik ela mishum desvirlohu kam baya b'rava, but because they held like a baya and rava that we have to be concerned about the koil, and that if Edim eventually were to show up even years later and say that this piece of marble was worth a prutta, then it would turn out retroactively that the first one's kedushin were kedushin, and therefore she's married the Isser to the second one, and therefore the Chachamim of Surah, to be on the safe side, were staying away from marrying into that family. Okay, the Gemara tells us another case. Hahu gavra de aktish b'shutisa de osa b'shuka. There was a man who was makadish, a woman, with a bundle, with a branch of hadas in the marketplace. Shochar of Acha Bahuna l'chamei de Rav Yosef. So Rav Acha Bahuna sent a message to Rav Yosef. Bahai gavnamai. What would be the din with these kedushin? Do we say is it valid or not? Sholach le. Rav Yosef sent him back a message. First of all, nagde, give the guy malchus. Kirav, based on what Rav says, because he did the Kedushin out in the street, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, the Itzterich Gita, and furthermore require this woman to get a get if she wants to marry somebody else, Kishmuel, like Shmuel says, because maybe it's worth a Shavu Prota someplace else. So in other words, because you have the suffix, whether it is worth a prutta or not. So Rabbi Yosef holds like Shmuel that you do have to be concerned about that. Now again, with that said, we learned previously on Daf Ches that Rabbi Yosef himself says that Shava Kesef has to be kits. It has to be a fixed value. So over here you have the question is whether it has to be a known value. Is there the smichus das? And then also, what if he tells her it's worth a certain amount? So over here he's saying the fact is it may be worth a prutta, it may be not. Based on what Shmuel is saying, we have to be choshish either way. Nevertheless, though, the fact that he was makadish in the street is a pritzah sticker thing to do, and therefore give him pech for that. So Rav mangid al the makadish b'shuka. Rav used to give malchus, meaning makas maudus, for somebody who was makadish in the street. Because it's a pritzah sticker thing to do, kiddushin should be done someplace somewhat private. Va'al de makadish with bia, Rav would also give malchus for somebody who makas maudus for somebody who was makadish with bia, because it's also a pritzah sticker thing to do. Va'al de makadish below shiduchi, and also when a man is makadish without shiduchim. Now we think of shiduchim as the whole process of finding a matching up a chosin and kala. The Gemara uses it more in the narrow sense of first the man asking the woman and then discussing with her that I want to marry you, and are you willing to? And then if she says I'm willing, then you pull out the prutta or the shava prutta and you makadish her. So to be makadish without that, that you would have, for example, the Gemara had on earlier blot, there were examples where, for example, a woman was selling some things, and a man says, a woman was selling some things, a man was selling some things, a woman comes to him and says, can you give me one of them for free? And he says, if I give it to you, will you be Makadish to me? So that kind of thing is what we're talking about over here, Makadish Palo Shiduchi, where he just on the spot gives her something and says, Hariat Makadishly. So Rav considers such a thing to be pritzistic and would give Malkus for it. And also Va'alde Mevatel Gitta, also for a man who is Mevatel a get, where we learned in Masech to Gittin that a man sends a get to his wife with a shliach, and then afterwards he's Mevatel it. So technically the Bittel works, but he's Motzi Laz on it. Or not Motzi Laz. The fact is that now the get is bottle. People don't know that, and the shliach is going to end up giving it to her, and she's going to get married with it. So Tosfos gives a somewhat different explanation. It's not that he actually tells the shliach it's bottle, because then for sure the shliach is not going to deliver it. Rather, what it means is we have the case over there where he's originally there, he was able to actually even to make a based in someplace else and be mevatel it. We learned in the Gemara over there, we had an opinion which was accepted by halacha that bitloy mevatel. The fact is, if he would, or I don't know if it's accepted by halacha, but whatever. Anyway, the point is, you do have an opinion that even after Rav Gamliel's takana that you shouldn't do that. Nevertheless, if he does it, it is chal. So therefore, still, Rav would give pech to somebody who did that, because now people don't even know that the get is bottle and the shliach is going to end up giving. Anyway, also while the Mosim Meidah Agita, also Rav would give Makas Maudus for a person who makes a Meidah against a get. So for example, he's forced by Beis Din to give a get, as the Gemara talks about at the end of Gittin, and he gives a Meidah, he makes an announcement, and he says, I am giving this get under duress, and it should not be valid. So maybe what he's saying is not valid, because Koyfinoi Satriya Meroit Sani, but the fact is, so even if he's mevatel that Meidah afterwards, we force him to be mevatel the Meidah. Nevertheless, still these motzi laz al get, you could conceivably have people who heard the Meidah and didn't hear afterwards the bittel, and they're going to think that this get is invalid, and they're going to think that later on when she gets remarried that it's also. So Rav would give malchus for somebody who did that, who made a Meidah on a get, even if afterwards he's mevatel it. V'adam etzar shlucha d'rabbanan. Also Rav would give makas maudus for somebody who harasses a shlucha d'rabbanan, a shliach of the Chachamim. So for example, a shliach d'rabbanan comes to summon him to a beis din, and the guy goes and hits him. So Rav would give a person makas maudus for that. So for that matter, also not only if he hits him, actually we're going to have a story later on in the line on Daf Ayin of Ar Masechta, we're going to have a story where somebody talked in a chutzpahdik way to a shliach d'rabbanan, and also he was put in chedim for that. So you have that also. Also for a person who was nidud for 30 days and didn't bother coming to Beis Din for Beis Din to be matir, right? So Rav would give him makas maudus for that, because the expectation is a person who's put in nidud, he ought to be coming as soon as possible to Beis Din to make amends for what he did wrong and for them to be matir. So if he doesn't care about that, then Rav would give him makas maudus for that. And the last one, Va'ochasna the Dayo Bechamur, and for a son-in-law who lives in his father-in-law's house, where therefore there's the problem that he may end up being mizana with his mother-in-law. The Gemara tells us elsewhere in Pesachim that there can be sometimes an inappropriate closeness between a son-in-law and his mother-in-law, and of course she's also to him. So therefore, so Rav would give pech for somebody who lives under those conditions. The Tosfos Riyah Zokin on the side of here gives a different explanation, that it means that he was makadish her and still lives and then comes to live with her before they actually did the nisuin. Where usually, of course, you do the kedushin. Back in those days, they did the kedushin, and then only a year later would they do the nisuin. And meanwhile, she's living at home with her father, with her parents. He goes and lives with them. So Rav would give pech for that. Later times, actually, it became more common that sons-in-law do live with their in-laws, and Tosfos over here discusses a few different justifications for it. One is because the fact is, this way they let to give rent-free, so therefore it's obvious they're not living there because they want to get it on inappropriately with their mother-in-law, but rather because it's a cheap place to live. Anyway, so the Gemara finishes off. So you're telling me that only if the son-in-law lives with his in-laws, then Rav would give him pech, but not if he just passes by. There was a case of a chosen who actually just walked in front of the door of his father-in-law's house, the nagdid of Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes gave him pech for that. So we see that he should be staying away altogether from the house, not just not living in it. And the answer is, the difference is, in that case, there was an actual case of chashad. There it was an actual, in other words, there it wasn't just that we're concerned maybe something might happen. There was already a definite chashad that he and his mother and his future mother-in-law were being mizana together. However, so now the Gemara finishes off. Nahar de Yamri, the Chacham of Nahar said, no, so you have this long list that the Gemara gave that Rav would give patch. The Nahar Doi disagree and say, Bakulu lay mangir, ela al the Merkadish bebia beloy shiduchi. No, Rav would not give patch for all of these things, only for the one who does kiddushin without shiduchim first, without talking with her beforehand. The ikadami, after the shiduchinami, or others say that even if he's makadish, only if it's both, he does two things wrong. He's makadish bebia, and there were no shiduchim before it. There was no discussion beforehand, I'd like to marry. So then Rav would consider that extremely pritzistic, that's tantamount to being like a zoyna, and therefore Rav would give pech for that, but not for the others. The ikad amri, afilu b'shiduchinami, some say, even if they were with shiduchim, mishum pritzusa, because it is pritzistic to do kiddushin with bia. So you do kiddushin with kesef or with shtar, and then later on after the nisuin, there'll be bia, but not to begin with, do bia for the sake of kiddushin. Tosfos says, the pritzus is also that the fact is you need edim for it. So it's mechur, it's an ugly thing really to have edim for that. But then Tosfos doesn't like that explanation and says, no, the pritzus is that you're starting out with bia, so it's similar to being makadish without shidufin. But as far as the other things, the now doi say, Rav would not actually give pech for those, and Tosfos says it's based on that sons-in-law do live in their in-law's house, and don't worry about the fact that we're saying that Rav disapproved of that, because the now doi are saying that it's not so bad. And again, Tosfos finds, and different other Rishonim find, different reasons to justify the practice that young married couples sometimes live with their in-laws for a while. Okay.